evening, Tomás.
Good evening, Raymond.
A very traditional English programme here tonight. I'm thinking strawberries and cream. I'm thinking Henley and Ascot. I'm thinking warm beer and wet weather.
Well, that's exactly not what I thought when I saw the phrase London Calling. I immediately jumped into The Clash, the famous new wave slash punk band of the late 1970s, early 1980s, were actually really pointedly getting at.
Yeah. That wouldn't have occurred to me now, Tomás.
Would it not, Raymond? No. You sure? I always took you as a new waver, no? You were more punk, you were a bit more hard.
No, I was a glam rocker.
No,
Slade.
It wasn't Wagon
Sweet.
Christ then for you, it was something else.
Oh, I hold punk rock culpable for destroying glam rock.
Oh,
just
God.
Completely tasteless stuff. Wonderful stuff.
Right. I can see you in a feather boa. You and Brian Eno. That's no problem to me at all.
No, he had a bit of class. I'm talking about people who had absolutely no talent whatsoever and were just having fun on Top of the Pops, you know.
Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Well, perhaps, you know.
Anyway, a couple of dinosaurs here this evening.
Absolutely, yeah. But I was interested to see, Tomás, I was looking, you know, okay, it's London Calling, English composers, looking to see, is there perhaps a subtext or a hidden link here? And of course, I think it comes from our conductor here tonight, John Wilson,
right,
who's just been appointed as principal conductor of the RTE Concert Orchestra. But he's established a significant reputation as a great interpreter of film music. Almost every year at the proms in the Royal Albert Hall, there'll be a prom with him and the John Wilson Orchestra playing, you know, Hollywood salutes this or something like that. And if you look a little deeper into it, we've got two quite serious pieces here, the cello concerto and the symphony, but both of tonight's composers, Vaughan Williams and William Walton, were very well regarded or very well known for film music, particularly composed during the Second World War. So perhaps he's had an influence there, said, you know, he plays a lot of fairly light film music, but maybe being inspired by that, has decided to use the work of two English composers who are well known for film music, but not on tonight's programme.
I mean, they both lived, you know, well into the 20th century, and, you know, Walton died in 83. In the middle of the 1960s, when the Beatles were dominating the world and the Rolling Stones were dominating the world, that was the English sound, he was scoring The Battle of Britain, you know, a huge big movie in 68, 69. And that was where, you know, classical, inverted commas, music was going at that point
but
in time.
But also, you touched on pastoral, and I think this is in some ways, you know, picture postcard England or, you know, chocolate box cover England. It's perhaps seen as a little bit twee, but the nice lyrical stuff. I don't think we're seeing it here tonight, though. For
no,
instance,
I don't think we are, no.
In both pieces, the symphony and the cello concerto, I mean, there are quite dark, brooding moments there as well. But I suppose the stereotypical view of both composers, well, I would certainly state it, I mean, I see them as being very much establishment. Both of them, you know, went to Oxbridge, Christ Church, Oxford, Trinity College, Cambridge. Both of them got the Order of Merit, which is, as of course you know, Tomás, in the gift of only in the gift of the sovereign for people who have great achievement in the world of arts, science, literature and so forth. Only restricted to 24 holders at any one time. So it was quite a significant honour for them to get. I'll tell you who has it, everybody will know about, is David Attenborough.
Right.
And Norman Foster, by the way. Okay. And of course, Norman Foster very much in the news at the moment, most because he's just designed the new winery buildings at Chateau Margaux.
Ah, right. Very good.
And which had been an extraordinary achievement. There was an interview done there recently with Paul Pontalier, the director of Margaux. And just looking forward to this new era, which the very grand plans and designs. And of course, Margaux, as you well know, boasts already the most impressive Palladian chateau in the whole of Bordeaux, and they make pretty fine wine too.
Well, they do, but of course that fight has been going on because his, you know, competitor, inverted commas, would be Richard Rogers, and Richard Rogers has been working his way up the Ribera del Duero, building one fabulous winery after another. So we're in the middle of a huge architectural fight there. So Britain has switched from Walton and sort of Vaughan Williams as their cultural ambassadors and music through to architecture as their cultural ambassadors, but they fit at the same profile. That's what they were up to, I think. And I think that's why they both got the Order of Merit.
I thought we were drifting there for a minute, Tomás, but you got us back on track perfectly.
Not a bit of it, not a bit of it. I would suggest that what you're describing there is the chocolate box Englishness. And even London, I mean, this, you know, the Vaughan Williams Symphony here is, you know, it's a London symphony. And yet, it's very quiet. I mean, obviously, the first whole movement is practically like a symphony on its own, as you're suggesting.
It is,
you know?
Yeah.
But really, it's a very quiet and pastoral and moody thing. It's very calm. You know, it's such a contrast to Bernstein. It's such a contrast to American visions of what cities would be. You know, look at West Side Story as New York, and that's a very different view of a city to what Vaughan Williams has come up with, which is practically like Croydon.
That's a very good comparison, I think, to us, because if you can think of that, the chutzpah of Bernstein's music when you know, describing, you might say, New York, compared to this is a much more somber, sonorous piece. It opens, as I thought it was, it's almost like it starts so low and slow, and it's almost like a dawn barely breaking, where the light is creeping into the world, like we feel at the moment in January, on a dull January morning, yes. Not a sunny January, where you wonder, will it ever get bright? And that's the way it opens up and gradually builds. And only then do you get big orchestral sounds coming in. But I think that pervades the whole symphony then. It goes on, only in, I think, in the third movement do we get a bit more of what I'd call, you know, the bells and whistles, shall we say.
Yes.
But then I love at the end of the very end of the symphony where it declines down into just the solo violin playing faintly fading away, and immediately there, without trying to read too much into it, I thought of, you know, the Thames flowing out at night to sea quietly as the lights go down and so forth. It really, I thought it captured that brilliantly. And I love a symphony, I have to say, I love a symphony where the composer, I think, is brave enough to finish quietly and not on that, you know, that whoop it up, dum 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 dum, and it's all finished. And what I love also then as well is if at the end of a symphony like that, the conductor remains with his hands up or whatever it might be to try and keep the audience quiet for a couple of seconds. You know, you can clap in 15 seconds or even 10 seconds time. Just hold for a second, just savour the moment, savour the silence, and then let yourself clap. And I like the way that can happen here.
Well, I think we're looking forward to it. But what about the cello piece? What about the cello piece?
Well, to us, I could leave now happy, I'd have to say.
Right.
I mean, that's one. I think it's a wonderful piece, not perhaps as well known as it should be. It's a measure, I think, of how well, highly regarded Walton was as a composer by contemporary performers. That, drifting aside for a second here, his violin concerto was commissioned by Jascha Heifetz, perhaps the greatest violinist ever. And this piece, the cello piece, was commissioned by Gregor Piatigorsky, a Russian cellist. If you want, there's a clip, perhaps we shouldn't reference YouTube here, but there's a clip on...
I think we should. I mean, I think it's a fantastic resource. You know, and as we both know, it's something you can go off and you can see an original performance by a dead composer who's doing who's composing, he's conducting, and then you get somebody like Piatigorsky, you know, actually giving a performance.
His performance of it is awesome, to be honest. I look at him and I say, he could only have been a cellist. He was a big, sort of strong, striking man with the hair swept back, and he's there, of course, in white tie and tails. There's almost an antique sound to this cello concerto, and he's just the man to play it. Dark, mysterious, sonorous. And as it started, I thought to myself, you know, this could be the music for a Sherlock Holmes film. And when I say a Sherlock Holmes film, I mean a Basil Rathbone, a Nigel Bruce Sherlock Holmes film. Not one of these modern fellows who plays him like some sort of a lunatic fool. I'm talking about the real proper Sherlock Holmes here.
Excellent.
Dead mystery and so forth. But there's a lot of dark, deep, sonorous sounds there. It sounds like a tautology to say it, but this piece was definitely written with the cello in mind. Obviously, it was written with the cello, but it's playing to the cello's strengths, that lovely, rich, strong, mellow sound that you get from the cello. I think it's a wonderful piece of music. Really enjoy it.
And Piatigorsky was a big man.
Yes, big, striking, dark-featured, almost a... made to play the cello, designed to play the cello, you might say. And again, just like Heifetz, Piatigorsky would have been regarded as one of the greatest cellists of the 20th century. So
Now, if I can come back to YouTube again, one of the things I did, and we're missing out, we haven't talked about one, the little piece here tonight, and I think it's the very pointed, sharp, snappy, stingy piece, The Wasps, by Vaughan Williams. Now, it's 9 minutes, and it's an overture. And I know it. It's, you know, it's a fairly well-known piece. And I decided to go off trawling, and I came across a fantastic full-length version, the play by Vaughan Williams, or the score by Vaughan Williams.
The play, yes. Yes. It's played about 2,000 years
ago. Yes, about 2,000 years. It was Aristophanes, I think, that actually wrote it, but that Vaughan Williams had a bit of a chant, a bit of a hand in it. And so he did the scoring for it. And it's an hour and three quarters. So we're seeing a 9 minute excerpt from an hour and three quarter piece again. But the overture is there, and it's up there on YouTube, and you can sit, you know, you can listen to this excellent performance out there. And it's, you know, so it is a real resource. So I listened to it. This is on the phone, one of the smartphones now.
What else? You've got a massive compendium of music on the phone there, have
you? Well, I do, he said, unfortunately. But I love it. I love the smartphone here. So here's YouTube. And this is a little bit. And this is a bit I was kind of disappointed. I remember Bob Dylan's Hurricane came out. And in it, there's a line which Bob Dylan says, which he says that the Hurricane didn't know what was about to go down. I'm terribly sorry. I don't know if we can say that in the concert hall, let alone play something from YouTube.
But I think you're drifting as well.
But when it was played on Radio Éireann, they put a beep on it. So it said they never knew what type of beep was going to go down. When I got the record and they didn't have the beep, I was very disappointed. So when eventually I was listening to this last night, at the end of the overture, it stopped. Da-dum, da-dum, boomf. And then there's a big... And let me play you this. Out comes the word bastards.
Oh, God,
bastard!
Bloody
spiggle!
Bastard!
So, as you can see, I was anticipating a little riot, a little mini riot going on. But, of course, that's the beginning of the play rather than the end of the overture. But the play itself is fascinating, and I think that's where there's some deeply interesting programming going on here. Because this play by Aristophanes, The Wasps, is all about a set of outsiders. They're soldiers in this particular case, retired soldiers. And they want to sting, they're the wasps, they want to sting away through court cases against the politicians, the corrupt bankers, and the golden honeyed circle elite that are ruining Athens. They're ruining Greece at this time. And I thought, well, little changes. But here it is. And this is, you know, it's beautiful programming to sort of bring this up. But of course, there's also, as we listen to that 9 minute piece, in Walton's little aside of 9 minutes that we hear, you practically encapsulate the whole of Walton's entire career, because we've got the buzz, buzz, buzz of the wasps, very reminiscent of the Spitfire Fugue by Walton. You've got elements that are very, very clearly waspishly evocative of the Battle of Britain by Walton, and then you've got sort of slower, moody pieces, a bit cello-esque in the moodiness, moving along, and then of course there's actually a bit of Tatooine. There's a bit
what
of a send-up of
Tatooine. You keep talking about.
Well, I don't know. Was I the only one in the audience there? Probably.
What
says you.
Tatooine.
Who is thinking about John Williams and Star Wars and his score for Star Wars. Now, of course, his score for Star Wars is really evocative of the Battle of Britain. I mean, that's what all these TIE fighters and fighters that they were fighting in Star Wars with. It's a really Battle of Britain battle scene.
I'm losing you.
Well, you hang with me there.
You still haven't answered my question.
His music is all based on this kind of buzzing and flying, which is very evocative of Walton, which people did think about in 1977. And that, of course, we're being told here by, obviously, as we know, Mr. Wilson is an expert at this. Here's a little hint, a little suggestion that there's a bit of Vaughan Williams in the Walton, which then feeds into the Williams, the John Williams of Star Wars. The Tatooine Planet is the slow, moody piece, the kind of Hound of the Baskervilles piece, if you will, for you now, Raymond. How about that?
You have bamboozled me to silence.
Excellent. That's the way we like it.
Ladies and gentlemen, all doors will close in 5 minutes. We request that you take your seats in the auditorium. All doors will close in 5 minutes.
Deep England we're talking about here, that, as I said to you, they came from very solid backgrounds, Oxbridge education and so forth. But also, you know, as soon as World War I broke out, Vaughan Williams, at the age of 41, signed up straight away into the Royal Army Medical Corps as a trooper and served pretty much heroically. They both served in the Second World War. Walton was exempted from duty on the understanding that he would write film scores. Now, these films that were made at the time, I mean, they were morale booster films. They were thinly disguised propaganda. Most famously, Olivier's Henry V in 1944, which I think makes for fascinating viewing now on all sorts of levels. First of all, you can watch it just to see how one of England's greatest actors would interpret one of England's greatest plays from England's greatest playwright. You can interpret it at that level, but then you can also say, well, what about the era and the circumstances in which this film was made? England was still at war. It's easy to look back now and say it was pretty much won in 44, but it's not won until it's won. There was the threat of German rockets, the V2 and the Doodlebug bombs and so forth. Nobody knew about these secret weapons. Maybe the thing wasn't over, but to watch it and to see the how it was tailored to the needs of raising the nation's morale and firming the backbones and so forth. And of course, you've got the great speech, you know, "Oh, wish not one man more from England." You know, before the Battle of Agincourt, "We've done it before." He's basically saying, "We've done this before. We've come through against terrible odds before. We can do it again." And again, it goes on about there are gentlemen abed in England this night who will rue the day they were not with us, you know. And this is being blasted out, you can imagine. And of course, the music is coming from Walton. So very, I mean, that to me is high English, you know.
Well, it is. I mean, it's stirring stuff. I was educated for many a year in England and went to a cloistered school in Middle England, a good 15th century Henry VIII dissolved monastery turned into a backbone of England grammar school. And there we were. We marched in into the hall every day past three pictures of Monty. So he came there during the war. He was there after the war. And he was inspiring us as we marched in to listen to Pilgrim's Progress and Walton. A lot of Walton.
Really?
But there's a lot of tuba. There's a lot of brass in Walton. And that appealed to the schoolboy, well, to the English schoolboy sensibility of that particular time. Now, this is people might think this is the 1830s, but we're talking the 1970s. But the school was trapped in 1942.
It was a relic of old
decency, and of course, therefore, being trapped in 1942. They really clung on to Vaughan Williams, Walton, Elgar, but particularly Walton, because he had that nice Spitfire Airfix vibe going down as well. And, you know, the sound effects. He was a big man for sound effects. And so the sound effects in his Battle of Britain piece, you get a lot of engine noise from the submarine Spitfire as it flies by. But of course, there's another Larry Olivier connection there, because the director of that film pulled the whole Walton score because it was too short to be released as an LP, and United Artists said, "We can't. We'll just get something we can put out instead." So they pulled the whole score, and Laurence Olivier came along and said, "You pull the score, you take my name off it." So they had to reinstate the Walton piece for the fight scene at least, but they had actually got somebody else to score the whole thing after that, because his bit was there. But his bit is still there, all sound effects, bubbling Britishness. But there's also a very different. I mean, I know. So you said the sort of Oxbridge side. Remember that Walton didn't qualify. He didn't graduate. And he was there as a choir singer. And he got that because he got a kind of a scholarship. His father was a chorister, a choir master in Oldham. And his mother was a music teacher. Now, you're Vaughan Williams now. But the granduncle was Darwin. And she was his mother was a Wedgwood. Josiah Wedgwood was a great-grandfather, I think. So, you know, very different people, very different class orientations.
I don't know, Tomás, because, I mean, like, it's all very fine saying he didn't graduate. And, by the way, he was an undergraduate. He went to school, he went to the choir school at Christ Church College, Oxford, and then became an undergraduate. It was said he was the youngest undergraduate since Henry VIII. So he didn't actually get a degree, but he did go to the university.
So you're saying in some way that's even more bourgeois, he didn't want to be graduated or qualify in any of that fancy lower middle class kind of way, is it?
I think just the very fact that both of them went to the two premier universities of England, immediately places them in a particular bracket. And I would stand by my assertion that they represent solid middle England.
I absolutely agree. They represent solid middle England. And what they did was they kept alive the flame of empire. They kept alive the feeling and vision of Britain's fading empire. Even as it crumbled before them, they could have stirring tunes evoking the empire by both Vaughan Williams and Walton right the way through. And they're both rewarded with their orders of merit. And indeed, Walton is there with his little slab in the middle of Westminster Abbey. Although, note very pointedly, it doesn't say that he's a composer. It just says Sir William Walton OM, servant of the empire, rather than composer.
Well, that's not too shabby, Tomás. Your own plaque in just because they left off the word composer, I think most people will know that.
Will they in 100 years' time?
Will his music still be played in 100 years' time?
Oh, we're coming to that old one. Benjamin Britten, yes. William Walton, I'm very, very worried.
Are you?
I am concerned. I know, I still know the words to see me dance the polka like Mr. White like a bear. Said Mr. White like a bear. Stop. With my top hat and my whiskers that tra-la-la trap the air.
Call security!
That's facade for you. That's most of my childhood with William Walton, rather than this cello piece, let me tell you. And I don't know if I'd be putting that down as high classical.
Are they calling
music.
Us back in for the second half?
I hope so.
We
are.
Hold on. Request that you take your seats in the auditorium immediately. Final call is...